welcome to the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, master TTAP trainer, and mother of two. I'm joined by my co-host, Victoria Wilkes, a fellow intuitive eater, passionate TTAPper, and mother of two. Each week, we want to empower you with new information about the way our bodies and minds work together to bring us into balance when we are well-nourished and well-fed. Victoria and I are not only good friends, but we are also lucky enough to be sisters-in-law. So join us as we discuss topics such as body image, intuitive eating, women's health, pregnancy and postpartum nutrition, the science behind nutrition and exercise, and so much more. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, here with my sister-in-law, Victoria Wilkes. Victoria, how are you?
I am doing really, really well, sitting here knitting.
Nice.
As always. Knitting some socks for my daughter this time.
Oh, fun. Yeah, I remember. Were you working on this at the beach? I can't remember.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Because we were both at the beach together last week. That's why we didn't have an episode last week.
Yeah.
We were both on vacation, so it was really fun. Actually, I'm having vacation withdrawals this week.
Oh, me too. and I got kind of lonely because we do a big vacation with Margaret's and my husband's family, like the whole Wilkes family. And it was just like, I got back home on Monday and I was like, there's nobody to talk to.
Yeah.
<I'm> all alone.
I know. And even my two kids were acting like they were wondering what was going on because they were just used to the chaos there.
Yes.
And then when they got back home, and even Roxanna was like, I missed the people. And I'm like, yeah, me too. But even when we were at the beach, if, you know, Hudson would bring her inside from doing something and everyone was out on the beach and not inside, she would look at him and be like, where's all the people? She just likes the chaos.
It's so cute.
It is very cute. Goodness. Oh, man. Yeah, so we had a good trip and we're glad to be back. So
yeah.
We're going to do our normal little segment here where we talk about what we've been eating recently that we've been liking. So what have you been enjoying?
It's actually related to the beach because my brother-in-law and his wife got a big, huge bag of mangoes, fresh mangoes, and they brought them and they just laid them on the counter and they said, hey, anybody who wants them can have them. And I was like, I'm not a big fan of fresh ones. Like, I'll eat frozen mangoes, but I'm not that big fan of fresh ones. But then one day I was like, I'm just going to try one. And it was like the best thing I've ever eaten.
That fresh mango is, oh, I love it.
So good. I used to eat, like a couple years ago, I was really into them. And then I guess I just ate them too much and I haven't wanted them since.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, it was like candy. It was so sweet and so
good.
Candy. And it
so
was just
good.
Perfection. And so I went back home and I immediately went to Walmart and bought a big bowl of mangoes.
Nice.
That's what I've been really enjoying lately. We had Eleanor, my 3-year-old, is also currently obsessed. And so we have been anxiously waiting every day because they didn't have any that were really ripe. Just today we had two that were ripe. So we ate them right away. And Eleanor is asking every day, are they ripe yet? Are they ripe yet? Can we eat one? Can we eat one?
That's so cute.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. How
nice.
About you?
Well, this is actually sort of related to the beach too, but when I went to Aldi on the way back from the beach, because I mean that day was just crazy. We were driving 6 hours with the two kids and then we got to Wilkesboro and we were like, okay, we're gonna stop by Aldi and, you know, get stuff. And
yeah.
So they have these sometimes when I go in there because my husband usually goes by, but I don't. So I was looking at the section that has all the fun stuff in it. And they had these, I think they're called Big Slice maybe, but they are little, they're packets of like kettle cooked apples. And the ingredients are extremely simple. It's literally apples, spices, and, you know, and they have ones that have berry and chia seeds in them. So like boysenberries and chia in there with the stewed apple stuff. And it's really good. And it's kind of like the same flavor of applesauce, but it's more, I guess I would say whole fruit applesauce, where it's just apples that have been cooked soft,
kind of like eating apple pie filling. Mm-hmm. I haven't even said this before on the podcast. These are, but they're really nice. They're in these little individual containers, and they come with a little spoon, so you can kind of eat them on the go. It's very handy. I have had those the last couple of days when I needed, you know, some fruit. I guess we're both talking about fruit this time. That's funny. But they're just nice. They're just nice to have on hand. They're handy. The ingredients are nice, and they are really tasty too. I like apples cooked like that. And I have cooked apples like that myself, you know, where I just sliced apples, put in some coconut oil, maybe some spices and lemon juice and stuff. And it's so good, but I'm so impatient. I will sit there and cook and be like, when is this going to be done? I'm just, you know, because it takes a while to cook them
It does. I've done it before too, but it takes forever for apples to cook down. Like 30 minutes for me. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
No, it's about that long for me. And I'm so impatient. I'm just like, I wanted these yesterday, and now I'm still waiting for them to cook. And then I'll end up burning them on one side because I'm so impatient. And it's terrible. I when I'm using the burners on the oven, I'm like, you know, I tend to do them too high because I want them to hurry it. Things to hurry up and cook up. And my husband's is the opposite. And he will put it, if he's cooking an egg or something, he will put it on like 2 out of 10 or 2 out of 8 or whatever it is. And I'm like over here, like, get it as hot as possible so we can get this done. I guess that shows something about our personality. The impatient and the patient. But anyway, it's funny. Okay. So today's topic is one that we've had requested multiple times since we started, I guess, and we just haven't ever gotten around to it yet. And this is, we're going to be covering the set point theory. So it's the theory that your body has a set point or set range that it likes to hang out at. We're going to explore the evidence for it and just our thoughts on this theory, because it's very interesting and it's pretty well documented in the literature. So I won't spoil it yet to say what, yeah. Is it true or is it false? But we'll just go into it. So anyway, it's very interesting because it's taught in certain circles, especially the circles more of the health at every size, just to really highlight the futility of intentional dieting behaviors, right, where you're restricting things to get down to your quote unquote goal weight. And then you have to figure out how to quote unquote maintain your goal weight. And it just, you know, sometimes it's that battle where people feel like it's futile. And some people are like, does my body actually have a range where I just want to hang out at? And the answer is it kind of does. Yeah. It really does. From both of our research, because I know you researched it as well in preparing for this episode.
Yes. And I have heard of it. The first time I ever heard of it was from Damn the Diets on YouTube. And I will post, I think that she has a couple of videos about the set point theory.
Yes, she does. One
fairly recently about how do you know where it will end up? You know, once you stop dieting, what is your set point? So she's the first one I ever heard of, and it just made sense to me. Yeah. And it really does make a lot of sense. And it's not like a blood test. It's not something that you can measure and say, okay, yes, for sure, there is such a thing as set point, you know, the range that your body likes to hang out at. And whenever we say a range, we're talking about pounds, how many pounds your body likes to be. But it makes so much sense, because if you've ever tried to intentionally lose weight and you hit a point where you can't go any further, I was actually listening to a podcast the other day, and one of the hosts is dieting, and he was like, so frustrated, because he's like, I've hit this wall and I can't go any further and I can't figure out what's wrong with me. And it's like, dude, your body is fighting you. So, you know, it's not your fault. So the set point theory is the theory, because you can't really, like I said, you can't like take somebody's blood test and say, yep, your set range is 140 to 160 pounds. Like you can't do that. It's individual. Right. For everyone. And it may even change throughout your life or throughout your age. But it's a range. Typically everyone says about 10 to 20 pounds. That's been true in my experience, where your body's comfortable at, and your body can fluctuate. Sometimes it fluctuates with your period, sometimes with water retention, with illness, with vacation, holidays, whatever. It's periods of stress. Your weight naturally throughout your life fluctuate. Some ladies gain as much as 15 pounds of water weight when they're on their period, and then they lose it again during the middle of the month. And so we have this idea in our current culture that any fluctuation of weight is awful, and it means that you've failed in some way. And of course, when we're talking about fluctuation, usually we're only concerned about higher weight, right? We're concerned about gaining weight. Nobody's ever concerned when they lose weight. People right. are concerned when they gain it. And they usually think it's something that they're doing wrong. But typically, it's just the normal ebb and flow of your appetite, your illness, your hormones, your whatever. Your body has wiggle room. And you typically stay around a certain amount of weight. And that's been true for me in my adult life as well. The problem is that a lot of us, because of what we believe about our bodies and about body fat, and fat equals bad, fat equals unhealthy, everybody grows up thinking that they're fat, and that that's a problem. And then so usually we think, well, we need to push past whatever barrier, say your lowest range that your body's happy at. Everybody's trying to figure out a way to get around it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that in doing my research yesterday, I didn't see a single article where somebody said that the set point theory is wrong. Everybody acknowledges that it's true, but everybody's trying to find a way to get around it.
They're like, how can we psych out the body to get around this physiological, you know, range? How can we get it, you know, to be artificially low?
Yes. That's the problem, is that people recognize that you hit a plateau, they call it, because they want to go further. And they're like, oh, you hit the plateau. And I was reading, just for fun, I was reading a dieting website. I was like, what do they say about the set point? And they completely acknowledge that it's true. And they're like, what is your set point and how to change it?
Yeah.
And how to get around it. And they were like, okay, it's basically all, it's kind of like being sneaky of like, here, you lose weight kind of slow for a while and you lose it fast. And then you try to do this and then you try to do that. And then you stop dieting for a while and then you start dieting. It's like all these ridiculous gymnastics to try to push your body past where it's comfortable. So if you can't tell, I am definitely a fan of letting your body stay within its range and not trying to push it below.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that people don't realize that, you know, as Linda Bacon says, your fat cells are not just dumb sacks of lard. That's literally a quote from her. They're actually organs. They're actually a part of your body that sends chemical messages to help regulate your body functions. Like it is actually part of you. Your brain receives messages from the fat cells to know how much energy is in there. Your brain receives moment to moment messages from your digestive tract, which tells, you know, hey, here's what our nutritional status is. And your brain receives signals stimulated by your physical activity, your emotions, sleep patterns, and everything else. And that's all communicating with those, I guess it would be called a, not a parahormone, but something where it's like, it's not necessarily a hormonal messenger, your fat cells, but they are actually sort of act as a hormonal extension, if that makes sense. They do sort of things that hormones do and communicate. And, you know, when someone is trying to get below that set point, your body wants to maintain the status quo and keep it stable into that range that we call the set point. But, you know, your body is going to strongly protect against you dipping below, though most people's body are, you know, they're not going to fight your body going a little bit higher. Your body is, like you were saying earlier before we started recording, your body is going to fight going too low rather than going higher, if that makes sense. Your body is trying to keep itself safe. So if it senses that you're trying to push it below that point, sometimes you can rebound and it will raise the set point. So if you lose the weight, like if you finally, oh, I lost my goal pounds, you will threaten this system, this biofeedback system. You're forcing all of those little fat cells that were communicating. Now they're gone. So your body kind of goes red alert, and it may actually react by raising your set point, which is, it's a protection mechanism. Your body really wants to protect you from dipping too low. And yeah, it basically, in other words, the weight gain, of course, everybody knows this, in, you know, in the dieting you know, mainstream dieting circles, weight gain is the easy part. And at the same time that the weight loss might not be possible, but it's easier to gain the weight rather than lose the weight. That's like a duh statement. But right. when you understand how, you know, your body, those little fat cells are not stupid. They actually communicate a lot of different things, and they tell your body how much energy is there and all of that stuff. So basically your body is always trying to protect itself, you know, and yeah. it maintains whatever it perceives is an adequate amount of fat storage to protect itself. So how much fat production your body requires is a result of this huge interplay of the genetics and the lifestyle choices that you made in the past or today. But usually it's a lot of historical stuff. And mm-hmm. that's all linked to your current weight. It, you know, all of these, you know, every historical data, so to speak, on yes. that. So, yeah.
Yes. And people, because of the way that doctors have talked to them, because of the way that magazines talk, and everyone from politicians to your mother are telling you that it's your fault what you weigh, and it's usually a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, if you weigh X many pounds and you want to weigh less than that, it's your fault because you don't have enough willpower or whatever. And understanding that your body has a range that it's comfortable in and that it will fight you tooth and nail to not go below it.
Right.
That's huge in understanding that it's not, you really don't have that much control over what you weigh. Yeah. You really don't have as much control as everyone says that you have. Everyone says, oh, all it is a matter of willpower.
Yeah. No, eat less, exercise more, and everything will be great. It's like, exactly. Oh my gosh, no.
That's not how it works. And your body, like what Margaret was saying, this is in an article, a medical article that I will link below. And a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be linking has kind of fat phobic language, because like I said, everybody acknowledges that it's a real thing, but they still want to be smaller. And it's like, mm-hmm. do you not understand the point of this range? Your body knows what it's doing. So this medical article, they were saying that your body is very rigorous and keeping you from dipping below your lowest point of your set range, but it really doesn't care about going higher. And so mm-hmm. that should tell us something. If yeah. your body does not mind gaining weight, why do we care so much? And it's usually just the look of it. And we've heard a lot of times too that, oh, you know, it's so unhealthy to be overweight. And there's a lot of factors that play into that. There's,
yeah.
in my opinion, almost all of the associations with being overweight or obese, according to the BMI, which we have an entire episode on, by the way. A lot of the stuff that is related to the higher mortality rates can be linked to the stress that your body is under from dieting. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who's at a higher weight in our culture, what is the first thing that the doctor is going to tell them when they come in? Hey, doctor, my knees hurt. Well, you need to lose some weight. Doctor, my periods are irregular. Oh, you need to lose some weight. Oh, I've got this ache in my eyeball. Oh, you need to lose some weight.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right. Yes, like, absolutely.
It's just assumed and it's never questioned because there's a higher association mm-hmm. between mortality and higher weight. And what right. we don't take into account is, what is every overweight person you know doing? They're dieting. Yes. And what does it do to your body? It puts it into extreme stress. So
yep.
anyway, I'm getting on a soap.
No, that's very good. Yeah. And was the, I think I have another article too. Was yours from PubMed? Because I have one from PubMed as well.
I had one from the National Health Institute.
Okay, sweet. Okay, so this is a different one, because I had one that basically, and we can link it as well. It's the title of it is Role of Set Point in Theory in Regulation of Body Weight. And it's pretty, I mean, it, you know, the abstract is pretty, it's pretty conclusive. they literally say, it's the conclusion is, it seems appropriate to assume that the level at which body weight and body fat content are maintained represents the equilibria achieved by regulation of many parameters. Mm-hmm. And it goes into, you know, there's evidence for involvement of various factors of psychological, physiological systems and psychological systems in the body that control food intake and regulation of body weight. And it also mentions the hypothalamus, which is one of my favorite things, because the hypothalamus controls it, you know, the hypothalamus and the pituitary together, they interact together. They're actually above the thyroid in the chain of the hierarchy. So you have the hypothalamus, pituitary, then the thyroid, and they all have to communicate really well. So if your hypothalamus might sense, okay, we're in an energy deficit. She just decided to join this 20-day beach body shred or whatever it is, and she's really cutting down on her energy. And we notice that our stores of fat are lessening. So we need to go ahead and put the upswing on our storage of fat and how we're going to get back this energy so that we're not putting ourselves into deficits. Cause you know, Carol's really working out these days and we've got to, you know, and Carol is just the name of the person in this analogy, but you know, she's really working out these days and we've got to, you know, protect her from going too low. And so the hypothalamus is the thing that, in this article and in this study, it says the set point theory suggests that body weight is regulated at a predetermined or preferred level by a feedback control mechanism. Information from the periphery is carried by an effector to a central controller located in the hypothalamus. So essentially, the external influencers give the stimuli and it just travels through your nervous system to the hypothalamus. And that thing tells, you know, gives the picture on what's going on and controls largely what we think is the set point. So
that is really interesting. Yeah. That is very interesting. So they can actually isolate where the communication takes
place. Yep. It goes to the hypothalamus. Yep. And it has a lot of, yeah. And it says, current working hypothesis includes roles for nutrients, dietary composition, and I can't even read this word. Organoleptic. I don't even know what that means. I need to look that up. Properties, hormones, neural pathways, various brain nuclei, and many neurotransmitters in the regulation of food intake. Ooh, neurotransmitters. That's a big one. That's the what happens in your brain when you're eating or not eating or exercising and all of this stuff. It's just very, very complicated. So essentially, it's very complex. Said point.
Yeah. Essentially, it is not what we've been told our entire life is that weight loss or weight gain is only what you put in your mouth versus how much you exercise and that you need to have a zero energy balance, right? Like that's what they were even saying that in the National Health Institute article that I found some really good information in. So I'm still going to link it anyway, but it's like, it is so much more complex than just a zero energy balance. It's not about making sure that you burn everything that you eat. And, oh, I ate a piece of cake. I worked out extra. So now I can have this ice cream. It is so much bigger than just you. It is not about just willpower and about what you're deciding to eat. And yes, your lifestyle does affect your health, lifestyle, what you choose to do, how you choose to move, how you choose to eat, what you put in your body does affect your health, but not as much weight. It's not going to affect your weight as much as you might like, or as much as you might think. But instead of getting frustrated about, well, you know, I can't control my weight as much as I thought, I would take it as really encouraging that it's like, it's not all on your shoulders of what you look like is not all down to you, you know?
Right. As much as our culture hammers in people, chisel your body with this and eat this diet and have this results and all of this stuff. And there's no, you know, magic formula or laboratory blood test to determine your exact set point. And there isn't a really objective way to figure out how tightly yours is regulated. Although I will say, if you have been in recovery, you kind of will notice that you have a range. Like I know that I have a range and it appeared after, you know, being in recovery for a couple years and then just my body kind of settled where it is. And even the scientists that I was reading that have done some of the studies on this, they estimate the average person has a set point range of 10 to 20 pounds. Now, now tell me, how many people do you see that are saying, I need to lose the last 5 pounds, the last 5 pounds? Honey, that could be you. You ate out and, you know, ate out 3 meals a day when you were on vacation for a couple of days. And that's 5 pounds. Like that's not, you know, when you look at the range that even these scientists are saying 10 to 20 pounds, That's like a big range. And the fact that people get so stressed out about the five, I got to lose those last 5 pounds. And just like I said, that could be a tiny something like that that causes your weight to shift. Like, it's not, I have literally in the past, and I didn't end up working with this particular client, but they came to me and said, like, their top goal was to lose the last 5 pounds. And I had to tell them, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't do last 5 pounds. That's not my specialty. I don't think I can help you. And they ended up, you know, obviously they wanted to lose the last 5 pounds. And I was like, I'm sorry, I don't do that. I don't do the last 5 pounds. I do, let's get healthy and support your body and let the chips fall where they may, literally or figuratively. So chocolate chips, or sorry, I had to add that in there. But really, it's like you have to, like, what's your priority, being thin or being healthy?
Right.
You know,
and I'm not just spouting this off. At the moment, I'm about like 20 pounds higher than I was at this point last postpartum.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still all within the same range. And so, you know, 20 pounds is a lot. Like, that's a whole, I'm like a size or two more than my clothes that I used to wear after Eleanor was born. And 20 pounds, you know, people would panic over 20 pounds. And I have been tempted to panic. I understand the emotional impact of, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, 10, 20 pounds over what I'm supposed to be. But your body accounts for that. It's not. So
weight
cycling, in the sense of going on a diet, losing a lot of weight, gaining it all back plus some, then going on another diet, losing a bunch of weight, gaining it all back plus some, that type of weight cycling has been linked to way higher mortality, heart problems. I can't remember the exact list. I read this study. They did a really big study. I think there were thousands of participants over years. And basically all of the negative effects that you've ever heard of associated with obesity, mm-hmm. and oh my goodness, make sure you don't gain too much weight. All of those bad things, like heart disease and mortality and all these different things, were associated with weight cycling, with yo-yo dieting. So it basically, it's suggesting that the bad thing for your body is pushing it past its limits, and then your body rebounding, and then pushing it and rebounding. That type of weight cycling is dangerous for your health. But the 20 range, that's just being a human.
Yeah. You're
dealing with various things, and your body's designed to fluctuate within that range, and that's okay. And to not panic about it, or, you know, oh my gosh, I've gained 10 pounds. It's like,
right,
chill. Maybe your body knows what it's doing. Your body probably does know what it's doing.
Right, exactly. And that, I remember reading, when I was reading Christy Harrison's book, the anti-diet book, that is really good. I think we recommended that before. Again, I don't agree with everything she says in there, because I'm the type of person where I take the good stuff and I leave the bad stuff, or that I don't agree with. But she had a really interesting section in there on weight cycling. And I had never, ever read it like that before, because she's explaining how, like you said, it's this cycle of where, you know, people who they've gone on the diet, they've lost quote unquote their weight, and then they end up gaining it back. Then they go back on the diet. And when you do that to your body, it causes that set point. It causes the alarm. Oh no, she's really, you know, lost 50 pounds. This is a big deal for us. We need to make sure that she gets this energy back in. So then they end up gaining the weight. And sometimes that can actually creep that set point higher, because your body is doing those compensatory. It's like chess. It's like, you move here, your body does this. You move here, your body does this. It's like, it's trying to put you, you know, checkmate all the time. Like, it's really trying to not let you become, you know, in a position where you don't have enough energy for what your body needs to do. So it will always compensate. And that, you know, and so, like we said earlier on, that can be encouraging, or it can be kind of frustrating for you to realize that it is not entirely in your control. Right. So, and again, when you are eating more intuitively, it is a lot of relinquish of control and not actually
being that quote unquote discipline, you know, using the air quotes of how all of these people with their eating, it's like disciplined and stuff. It's actually being intuitive because your body is different than everybody else's body and has different needs. And that's where it really pays to be intuitive instead of so controlling. And we are trying, right. You know, and like I've said before, we don't have 100% control of our health. We just don't. No. I'm sorry. You cannot, you know, eat the perfect diet and have the perfect levels of stress and all that. Nobody that I know is in perfect health. Okay. It's not about, and I'm certainly not, it's not about the perfect health. It's about, you know, being as healthy as you can be with what you're doing and not letting it take over your life. It's being sustainable. Right. And I just think that people get really wrapped up in thinking that everything is in their control. And I know I am the worst offender on this because that's one of my things I struggle with is I have this like need to feel in control. And that's why I ended up for me with issues with my body because my external life felt out of control. So I thought, oh, I'm going to control the one thing I think I can control. And why I say I think I can control because you really can't. And I thought I could, but I really couldn't because I was shutting my own body down with what I was doing. Like it's, you're not able to be fully in control of your weight or your health. You can do what you can do. And they say, you know, control the variables that you can control, which for someone like me who is already type A, I'm like, okay, I can control 99% of the variables. And what do I do from there? No, it's not. It's, you know, you still are, you know, a mom, you're still, if you're a business person, you're still doing that. Like you've got a lot going on. Just, you know, the stress too, as we are going to talk about, we're going to do some more episodes on stress and cortisol and all of that, but that really plays into it too. So that was kind of a little tangent, but anyway.
No, it's true about health and about how, and I want to stress so much that your health does not matter. Hold on, let me rephrase that. Your body size does not affect your health. Your health choices affect your health. And and that's what I was saying a minute ago. It's like, yes, of course, what you eat, how you exercise, whatever will affect your health, but the way your body looks doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. And that's what I am reminding myself of right now whenever I have a moment where I wonder what somebody, you know, oh, I haven't seen this person in a while and I'm 20 pounds more than they saw me last time. What are they going to think of me? It's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because it honestly does not matter. It doesn't mean anything about you as a person. It doesn't mean anything about your health. One of the really good resources that I found. And again, she's kind of uses language of really negative towards body fat, but she also had some amazing facts that I had never come across before. She is a TED Talk and it's a 12-minute video and I highly recommend watching it. It's called Why Dieting Doesn't Work. And it's all about the set point. And it's about intuitive eating. And she talked about how she was a dieter for 30 years. And she was so frustrated all the time. And she'd cycle, weight cycle all the time. And then she just decided her New Year's resolution was to stop worrying about her weight and to just eat whatever she wanted. And she said that she's just been so at peace. And she was talking about in her research that she's done about intuitive eating and the set point theory and why your body fights weight loss so much. And she had a great analogy for that, but I won't spoil it all. You can go watch the video. But when we're talking about health and body size, she made the point and she made it sound like a really negative thing, which I didn't like, but she was saying that whenever you've been at a higher weight for a long time, usually from dieting, from the weight cycling in your body has the protective mechanism of gaining more weight every time it comes back. She said that your set point seems to permanently stay higher. And so a lot of people could be really panicked about that of like, well, what if this weight never goes back down? What if I never am the same size that I was however many years ago?
Yeah.
Where I dieted. And Kayla Kosecki, the Day in the Diets, has a video called What Will My Set Point End Up Being or something like that, which I will link to as well. And she is of the opinion that it will go back down. It just takes a long time. She's seen it take up to 6 years And so I don't know which one is right. I don't know if your body really does permanently keep it higher, or if it just keeps it higher for several years to make sure that it's safe and that you're never going to diet again, and then it will go back to its predetermined range. All of that is to say, whatever body size you are, if you are in the category of obese and your doctor is really concerned about your health and your mortality rates and blah, 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 this lady in the TED Talk had a fascinating graph that she showed, and I recommend you go watch it somewhere in the middle of the video. It was a normal size, normal, this is all BMI categories. These are not my words, but normal size people, overweight people, obese people, and they were showing the mortality of each group of people, of the people who don't do any healthy practices, which by healthy practices, they mean eat more fruits and vegetables, exercise 3 times a week, drink in moderation, no excessive drinking, and no smoking. That's what they categorized in this study, that they were studying mortality rates of people at different weights. So if you are overweight or obese and you are not doing any healthy practices, your risk of death is higher. And they didn't explain why. But if you do the healthy practices, and they're not that hard, I mean, just don't regularly get drunk and don't smoke and, you know, those kind of healthy practices, every single weight category had a low mortality rate. It completely leveled the playing field. And this is huge, because this means if you want to see the graph, like, go look at it. Your weight does not have to affect your health. Like you can literally show it. If somebody's giving you a hard time about it, like say you're in the obese category and your doctor's all concerned and wants you to go on a diet, but you understand how bad the dieting is and all that. I mean, show these people, like, look, you can be healthy. And we have a whole episode about what is true health, and about how the whole episode on BMI and how inaccurate body weight is for a measure of health. So all that is to say, don't stress so much, even if it's true. I don't know if it's true or not. I tend to lean toward the opinion that of the Damn the Diets lady, that it might just take a while for your body to go back down to its predetermined range. But if not, if you're at a higher weight your whole life, who cares? Like, you can be healthy. You can have a great life. You can be, you know, as healthy as you can be. Nobody's perfect, but I just thought that was fascinating, of like, here's some hard evidence showing that it does not matter what you weigh. Yes. So encouraging and exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Because that, I feel like that it's almost inconceivable for people sometimes. Like, they literally, you know, for them to actually understand that it really does not matter. Like, it really doesn't. Like, maybe, you know, I don't know. It's just really hard to get in people's heads sometimes, because it really doesn't. Like, you can, you know, I've seen clients that have great blood work and their doctor's like, but you know, you need to get rid of that extra 30 pounds. And then I look at their numbers and stuff, and they're very healthy. Like, their insulin sensitivity is good. Their sleep is good. Their stress levels are okay. And usually they're just coming to me for the weight part. And then I'm like, wait a minute, you look like you're in very good health. Like, what's going on? Oh, my doctor told me I need to lose 30 pounds.
Right.
Okay. Like, really? So, you know, it's like I said earlier, you know, eating well, trying to reduce your stress, exercise, sleep, all of those good things, you know, that's never bad to do. Like, it's going to only increase your feelings of well-being and your satisfaction with, you know, your life situation, all that. That's going to be great. And you know, let things happen as they, that's always going to be in style, if that makes sense. it's not the cutting the calories and the doing that, you know, nobody really wants to do that. Really, nobody wants to have to do that. And I think that it can be liberating for people to realize that, you know, when you just don't even bother with the number, why don't you just focus on the things that you know you can do that are healthy and helpful. Like, for example, I've been doing skin brushing more recently, and I forgot how good that is. I didn't do it while we were on our trip. But I, you know, started back with that recently, and just little stuff that, you know is helpful, drinking water, you know, trying to help your stress levels, making sure you're getting the sleep that you can get. That's always going to be great. There is no debate of, is that necessary or is it good? Really, there isn't. Right. But, you know.
Yeah, and people's just, like you said, it's almost like trying to explain to someone that, I mean, it's like trying to tell someone there's no such thing as gravity or something. Like, it's that level of, I cannot accept this information, you know, like trying to tell somebody that weight does not associate directly with your health. Like, it's like trying to tell somebody that the sky is red. I mean, like, they can't grasp it because we've been hammered into our heads from every TV show we've watched, every doctor's appointment, every magazine, every, I was reading a science fiction novel the other day where they were hammering this information. And I was like, really? Like, in a science fiction novel. Okay. I thought that I could, you know, I thought I was safe here, but apparently not.
Yeah.
It is so hard to accept, but once you actually look at the evidence, the evidence that your body doesn't care if you weigh more than Aunt Edna thinks you should weigh. Like, your body doesn't care. What your body cares about is making sure you don't get too low.
Yes.
With your weight, and your body cares about you actually being healthy, and your body's going to respond to healthy habits no matter what weight you're at. And the basic underlying thing of the set point range is that you can't really control your body's weight, but you can control what you can control, which is, you know, eat more vegetables or try to sleep better, or, you know, try to stop smoking or whatever the different things are. That's what's going to affect your life, not going on a crash diet and losing 10 pounds. You know, maybe your body doesn't need to lose those 10 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that people need to remember that health is not about looking good. It's about feeling good. Like, do you feel good in your body? Are you having good energy? How's your sleep? How are you digesting things? All of that stuff. Like, it, you know, you're at the end of the day, you know, I have actually seen people that their numbers, maybe they're okay. Again, with the whole, if you look good, you must feel good. That's not true. I have seen people that they're very, you know, they're quote unquote thin. And you know what? I had one lady who had Lyme. This was way, way back when I was first starting with this. But she had Lyme and she told me, she's like, I wish that I could gain weight. I can't I literally cannot gain weight. She was very thin. She was not feeling well. She had all the symptoms of being underweight, but she literally could not, no matter how much she ate, she literally could not gain weight. And it was a side effect of the Lyme that was affecting her tissues. And she just literally could not gain weight. And yet people were looking at her going, girl, you look so good. Like, oh my goodness, you just look so like fabulous. And she's going, guys, I am sick. I feel horrible. You know? So it's just messed up. It's just messed up that we equate, if you look quote unquote good, you must feel
good.
If you look good, you must feel good. And it's like, no, that's not.
You're going to live longer and you're going to have a successful life and blah, blah.
It literally means nothing because you don't know. You really don't know. So,
no. No, you have no idea because if it's true that your set point changes to be higher, whether for a few years or permanently, whatever, after, for whatever reason, what if that person is in better health than you are, that you're looking and judging, or like the doctor's judging this person who's in the obese category and the person's literally like doing amazing and like sleeping well and exercising well and feeling in a good relationship with food and like intuitively eating. Like, you cannot look at somebody and tell their health or their relationship with food or whatever. And so just trying to separate the visuals from the person's actual worth and their what their body's doing. Their body usually knows what it's doing, and then your body's really smart.
Yes, absolutely. People don't think it is, but it's very smart.
Yeah. You think your body's trying to screw you over with like not losing weight, and it's actually trying to save your life.
there needs to be a meme for that where you're going, if I can just lose this last 20 pounds, and your body's going, Carol, I'm doing the best that I can. Like, I'm really trying here, honey. I'm really trying. Why do I keep using Carol? I hope there's nobody that listens to our podcast named Carol. I just randomly picked a name. But you know, your body is sitting there going, honey, I'm trying to help you. I'm really trying my best. Just give me what I need to do what I need to do, and I'll do what I can do for you.
Yes. Because,
you know.
Yes.
It's just kind of the do unto others as you do, but also in with regards to your body, because it really, like, you know, yeah, it we know the things that it likes generally, and, you know, hopefully you know what foods work for you and what makes you feel good and all that, and, you know, yeah, it just likes being treated well, so. Well, do you have anything else to add to that?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoy this podcast. We will be back next week, as always, with a new episode. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Bye.
For more great content, check us out on Instagram. We're at instagram.com/dietdetox. We'll see you next time.